During Yanni Nesuin, topics regarding weddings. And Bez Hashem, I'm sure you get invited to weddings. Bez Hashem, your own wedding should be soon if it hasn't been yet. So it's something that in this age, especially in this age that you're in now, something that's very common occurrence. And we should go through some of the halachas regarding the whole Nesuin ceremony. Okay, so when we get to a wedding, so usually the there's a chasen's tish where the chasen is there with the Masada Kedushin, and different chaverim, etc. So usually two things happen at the chasen's tish. The first thing is filling out the tanoim, then filling out the ksuba. Now the tanoim.
Sorry, what's the chasen's tish?
Yeah, chasen's tish. Yiddish
Sephardic. Yes. I like I've heard of it, but I don't know like.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Tish is a Yiddish word for table, chasen's table, meaning that. Usually when everyone else is eating the smorgasbord, so the chasen and the Masada Kedushin and his friends are and usually in a different room, and they that's called the chasen's tish, where the chasen's table. I mean, the chasen's there, and the rabbi, the Masada Kedushin is there, and usually the fathers are there, and the friends are there, and they usually have some cake on the table, and etc. And that's where certain documents are being filled out, and certain kinyonim are made.
It's not Shabbat Chatan.
No, this is not Shabbat Chatan. Shabbat Chatan is on Shabbos.
After the wedding or before the wedding?
Well, we have a concept of Ofrav, the Shabbos before, and we have the, you know, this is at the wedding. We're holding at the wedding now. We're at the wedding now, okay? Okay, so so the first thing that's usually filled out is the shtar tanoim. The tanoim usually used to be done way before the wedding. That was at the time of the engagement, that the that there was a shtar filled out, and that each one should commit that they shouldn't back out from the wedding, and if they would back out, they would be. They would be fined, you know, etc. So that's what, you know, tanoim are all about. It's commitment to the wedding. Now, it's a little, you know, strange to first have a star of commitment at when you're coming to the wedding. You're ready. You're there. No one's backing out. Hopefully. So. So it's still done as a, you know, it's so it really doesn't have too many halachic bearings today, the shtar tanoim, and it's basically, you know, a lot of people use the Rav Moshe nusach of the shtar tanoim, which says commit with the monetary obligations to the wedding, etc. And basically, what it is it's mentioning the two fathers' names are in the shtar, that they're representing each. The one is representing the chasen, and the one was representing the daughter, the chalup. And that's you know what's going on there, and. Basically, what's done is the rabbi takes out a handkerchief and he gives the handkerchief. The handkerchief is a kinyan suda. In other words, a kinyan chalipin. That if, say, I want to buy something from you, so I give you a handkerchief. I say you want to sell me something. So I'm going to buy from you. So I give you a handkerchief, you pick it up. And the time you pick it up, you have be makna to me your house or whatever thing that, and then I'll pay the money some other time. But whenever you make a shtar with a chalipin, that finalizes the transaction. And then the payment is a separate thing. So you basically, so here, if a person wants to make sure that the father is committing himself to the monetary obligation, so the rabbi gives the shtar, gives the hanky to the father, and he picks it up in front of two witnesses, and then the rabbi gives it to the other father, and he picks it up in front of two witnesses. And now you have two witnesses who saw both fathers making the kinyan. And then they sign their name on the shtar tanoim. Okay? So that's what it is today. Again, today it's done at the chassan's tish itself. It used to be done, you know, more at the engagement time, when that was the time that they were committing to go through with the marriage. So here we just do it. It's an opportunity to give kibudim. You know, you have two witnesses who are going to sign the shtar tanaim, and then at the chassan's tish also we have another person who's going to go and read the tanaim, and that's also done at the. It's also done at the chassan's tish. In other words, first, the rabbi makes a kinyan with one father. He gives him the hanky, the father picks it up. He gives the hanky to the second father, and he picks it up in front of the two witnesses, and then the witnesses sign. And then somebody reads the tanoim. And when the person's reading the tanoim, the mothers are already called in to the chassan's tish, and they have the minhag to break a plate, whatever, they break it as soon as the tanoim are finished being read. Now, as I said, the tanoim, b'zman hazeh, are not the same, they don't have the significance as what it was when there was a real tanoim. That there was, at the beginning of the engagement. And then after that is the ksuba. So the ksuba is the shtar, which now the chassan obligates himself in different monetary obligations to the, if God forbid he divorces her, he has to pay her money, he has to pay, based on the things that... are being brought into the marriage, and certain things that he's going to pay her if chas v'shalom the marriage is dissolved. So he's committing himself on those things. So basically, the rabbi makes the kinyan with the chassan. See, the first, the shtar tanoim, the kinyan was made with the fathers, not with the chassan. Here, The kinyan is made with the chassan, and we have two eidim. Usually you get another two eidim, give another two kibudim. And the rabbi gives the handkerchief to the chassan in front of the two eidim, and the chassan picks it up, the two eidim latch, and after that they can sign the ksuba. Now, the ksuba, we're not going to do all the intricacies of filling out a ksuba. But the ksuba obviously has the name of the chassan and the kala, and the dating. The dating of the ksuba is an important... obviously, you date it to the date of the wedding. It's the time that you date the ksuba. But what happens sometimes is that the people make weddings very often that... They are shmashas at twilight. So the chassan's tish say if shkia is 7 o'clock and the chassan's tish is at 6:30 and the chuppah is taking place afterwards. So the question is, which date do you date it at? Do you date it? Then normally we have a klal.
Mishnah says Shvar Chov Mukdamim Psulim Mukharim Kshayim. Whereas if you have a shtar that says somebody owes somebody money, right? Say, because I lent money to somebody. So from that time on, there's a lien on the land. In other words, if I borrow money from somebody, so now not only have to pay back, but the person who's borrowing them, who's the lending me the money, has a right to collect from my property if I can't pay back the money. He can take my land. And even if I sell the land, he could go to that other party and get it back because if the loan is not paid up. So the lien, right, the lien on the land, the lien on the land happens from the time of the transaction. So if you would date a shtar early, so that means that you're trying to get the malve is going to have a lien on the land earlier than he really should. So that's possible. And if you date it later, so that's fine, because then he's just being mochel on that opportunity. Okay? So the question, so whenever it's a doubt, some posts can say, whenever it's a doubt, when are you supposed to date the shtar? Because it's like during Bein HaShemoshos. So some posts can say that just post date it. In other words, so if you're having the wedding Tuesday night and you're not sure, you know, it's during Bein HaShemoshos time, after Shkia around that time, and so then you just date it for the next day, and then for sure it'll be a good shtar. Because if you date it early, then that's the din of shtar chov mukdamim psulim, that if you make a shtar a chov earlier than what it's supposed to be, so that means that the kala is like the malva, because the shtar is for her benefit. So, if it's dated earlier, that means she has a right to his property a day earlier than she should. So therefore, the shtar should only be post-dated. Some poskim are of the opinion that since you made a kinyan with the chassan at the chassan's tish before shkia, then that takes care of muktamim, and you could really put it, you know, the date of the previous day. You don't have to post date. But the simplest thing is to always post date. If you post date it, then for sure it's good. Because a shtar mulcher, but if you predate, then you can have problems. Okay? Now, there are a couple of... Now, obviously, the names change based on who the chassan and the kala are. There's a question whether you write the last names or not. Some have the opinion, like say his name is Yaakov Shimon. He say he's the chassan. Yaakov Shimon ben Yecheskel. So some put, there's Mishpachas Goldberg. Some put in the Mishpachas, some just put in Yaakov Shimon ben Yecheskel. They don't put in the Mishpachas. Some say by putting it in Moshe's discussion of the Mishpachas, then because there could be a lot of Yaakov Shimon ben Yecheskel. So if you want to know who specifically is Mishpachas Goldberg, then that's so many Yaakov ben Shimon Yecheskel, Mishpachas Goldberg. So, but even if you put in the last name, you only put it in the first time the Chassan's mentioned and the last time the Chassan's mentioned. The rest of the time throughout the Ksuba, it'll just say Yaakov Shimon, Chassan Dana. Okay? And the same thing for the Kala. In other circles, some circles, they never will put in the Mishpachas. They'll just put Yaakov Shimon ben Yecheskel, they don't do last names. and some doulas. No big deal either way. I usually, it depends on how much room there is in the ksuba. You know, I'm not a person who requires last names. I do last names if there's a lot of extra space. And so, you know, the two, which you're not supposed to have extra space in the shtar. So because a lot of times they have ksuba, so they give you the space. So you realize it's Yaakov, Shimon, Ben Yecheskel, and then it says Chasar Danan, right over here. So you have a whole space here. So either you can put in the fractals, or you can just make a line. Like, you know, when you write a check, you make a line. And so it depends what you want to do. You know, this is up to the Masada Kedusha, not up to the Chasim. Masada Kedusha is making these calls. Then there's another part in the, when it refers to the Kala, it says she's coming Mibei Avuha, from the house of her father. That's what it says in Mibei Avuha. However, the minhag is that if, God forbid, at the time of her wedding, the father already is predeceased, then you don't write Mibei Avuha, you write Mibei Nosha. Nosha, it means forgotten. Like Menashe, Nosha means she's coming from the forgotten place. He was a father, not Chasson that he was forgotten, but she's not coming directly from his house. Okay, Bei Nosha. So if the father, the Kala's father is alive, you have Bei Avuha. If she's not alive, then it's written Bei Nosha. Okay? Then, there's another thing that in the ksuba is at the end of the ksuba is written like this: the kanina mine, the mana, the kosher, the miknaya thing. Kanina mine means we made the king. That's the hanky with the chasm. So some have the minhag that they only fill in the words the kanina after the kinyan was already done. In other words, a lot of times you have a shtah, a ksuba, that's already, you know, it's filled out. I mean, and you just have to fill in the names. You know, the basic text of the ksuba is already there, and they're blanks, because every chasana, there's a different chasana, a different kala, etc. So sometimes they'll leave out this word as well, the kanina. With some of the opinion that you shouldn't write in the kanina till after the kinyan took place. As Rosh Hashanah points out, the Tosfos says, mefzik ha-shikra. It looks like a shaker that you're writing that the kinyan took place before it really took place. Now, the pasha is not a problem because since the Eidim didn't sign yet, you know, so what, that it says. So some have the minute that only after the kinyan was made will they fill out the word the kanina. Some ksubas, what they have is like this. They'll write like this. Viranina, meaning, and then you just fill in the line of the kuf after the kinyan is made. Now, the problem with this is if you leave it out, every once in a while, the Chasam Kedushin could forget to put it in. And the Eidim already signed. And that's a whole big discussion what to do. In other words, if a Kanina is left out, and then the Eidim already signed, so basically they signed a shtar that doesn't say that the Kinyan took place. So that's why, it's my opinion, not only my opinion, other people are body holds this way, others, that to always write it in from the beginning. And you don't have to worry about this chashash that if you leave it out, people are going to just write it in. Just write in the kanina from the beginning, even before the kinyan is made. Because a lot of times, I've been in many weddings that that they left it out because they wanted to do choshesh for this chumra of not putting it in till afterwards. And then they made the kinyan, and then they forgot that they have to fill it in, and then they had to sign. And then only under the chuppah, when the guy's reading the ksuba, do they realize that, hey, you know, we forgot it. And then their opinions, their shekels, you have to write a new ksuba, this whole night, you know, it's a whole big mess. So you shouldn't get involved in the mess. The best thing is to have it written in before. But that's for the Masada Kedusha to decide. Okay, so that's what's done at the Chassan's Tish. So again, the Tanaim and the Ksud, the Kinyan of the two fathers has done. The Tzomer reads the Tanaim, the plate is broken, then the Kinyan is made, then the Eidim look over the Ksuba, and the Sadek Lushan fills it out, the Kinyan is made with the Chassan. The Chassan's giving the handkerchief, he picks it up, that's where he's Meshabed himself for the monetary obligations. Made him sign, and that's the end of the Chassid's Tish. Then the band starts playing, and the Chassan goes to the Badekin. That's the next stage. I'll erase this. In Yiddish, you know, there are no segels in Yiddish. So an ayin is a segel. Okay? So when you only want to have the sound eh in Yiddish, you write an ayin. So that's badekin. So the badekin is when the chassan pulls down the van. So that's done. You know, the Gemara says that a woman who's married goes out behinuma. She has a certain veil on to show that she's in the suah. So that's this vadekin. That's why I think it's proper at a wedding that the kala should keep on the thing that she has on her head throughout the wedding. Shouldn't take it off. Not that she doesn't have to have it over her head throughout the wedding, but that thing that she wears on her head, she should wear throughout the wedding.
Why?
Because that is the sign of the suin. So that should be throughout the wedding, that sign of the suin should be apparent of her.
I know it's not done, it's not the practice, but women don't cover their hair by their wedding.
Yeah, so that's a question, whether women should cover their hair. Some poskim hold that, you know, at the wedding already, the woman should have her hair covered like a married lady.
Well, are they saying that the kinyan hasn't been chal yet, so therefore she
has to... So that's one opinion. And the other opinion is, I think what they say, another opinion, I think they say from Rav Moshe maybe, is that until the wedding is consummated, then you don't need to cover your hair. So the other opinion is that not till the next morning is the hair covered.
So Ishtar doesn't constitute consummation?
No, consummation is the actual intimacy, is the consummation of the marriage. So there are some people that have the minhag that they have the kala already covers the hair at the wedding. And in the circles that most of the fellows here, they're not cover the hair until the next morning. And even if the wedding wasn't consummated, but still, since they were, you know, in privacy through the night, in other words, no one has to know what happened, what didn't happen, that's when the woman starts covering her hair. Okay, so they do the Bodekim, and okay, and then there's a minute that the two fathers give brachas to the Kala at the Bodekim, etc. Okay, so that is the pre-chuppah part of the ceremony. Okay, so now we get to the chuppah itself. So, the chuppah itself is the following. So, first, you know, we have this minhag that people march down to the chuppah. That most probably is a non-Jewish practice. It's a shayla of chuppah sakum. People talk about practice, but the nice, that's what a lot of people do. I think Rabbi Blumenkrantz spoke out against it. I mean, whatever. It's, I don't think, it probably comes from the non-Jewish wedding ceremonies, this idea of people walking down.
How else are we supposed to
ride
to the chuppah?
Just be there.
Yeah, but it's just like you can have the chatham and kala waiting over there for like half an hour, one hour, it's like all the guests arrive.
Whatever, especially the idea that all these relatives walk down and everything like that. Okay, look, I'm not here to change what a lot of people do, but it's not necessarily the, especially for young women to do walk down, it's not exactly it's a newer thing. So, you know.
Is there an even to escort the chassan and the kala to the chuppah?
Yeah. Okay, so really, I mean, the more you show the circles, the what's done is just, you don't have 100 people walk down. Two parents or Hasidisha circle, the two fathers and other circles, the father and the mother,
yeah,
take the chassan down, and then the two fathers and mother take the kala down, and that's it. Not 100 people, you know, that's a preferred way, but I wouldn't, you know, again, I'm not here to change people, you know, especially the probably the backgrounds of where you'll be involved in, we'll all have this, so, you know, just leave, let it go, you know, for the time being. Okay, so the chassan, obviously, he walks down first with his parents. Some have a minute, the parents to hold candles, as Zecher to Maimon HaSinai, when there's fire. Others hold, have a minute not to hold candles for safety reasons. And,
Is there written in Sephora anywhere about a married outdoors?
Yeah. Right. The Indian of getting married outdoors. Hasidim always get married outdoors. In the coldest weather, snowing, raining, they will always get married outdoors. Like, for them, getting married indoors is like, you know, not heard of.
Why?
Because to get married tachas the stars, it's a simon bracha. You know, you'll be prosperous by the stars, etc. It's a minig. But in, you know, Hasidic circles, a minig, sometimes a minig to certain people is like, minhagim are very important. We shouldn't underestimate minhagim, but certain people, especially in Hasidic circles, the minhag, you know, is very, very important. So Hasidim always get married outdoors. Okay, so you have the chassan comes down, and the then he comes down, he puts on a kittel,
You know, it's like a Yom Kippur for the chassan. You know, he's fasting. And when he davens mincha that day, he davens the mincha for Erev Yom Kippur with the whole vidui. And then the kala comes and she goes around him seven times. And then at the end, she's supposed to end up on his right. That's a minhag. That's on the chassan's right. So depending upon the two minhagim, whether the chassan's kala face the people or face away from the people. Some of the minhag that they face the people was it's kavod hatzibur to face the people. Some have a minhag to face away from the people. It's like more, you know, tsanua thing that he's. You know, the verse says that you shouldn't mekadesh an isha b'shuk. You shouldn't mekadesh her publicly, you know, because it's a private matter. And some say for that reason they face away, that they shouldn't. And some people dafka might be, you know, to face forward. But whichever way, it should be to the chassan's right. Okay. So then, at that point, usually after the whole, you know, she went around him, and now everything stopped, the music stopped, the chassan is standing there, and the kala is there to the chassan's right, and now they call up the Masada Kedushin, right? So the Masada Kedushin is the one who basically has two things. He's going to be saying the Brachas Erison, and he's going to just make sure that everything goes smoothly, you know, in terms of the whole wedding ceremony. So and then they also very often will call up as well the Eidei Kedushin. Two Eidim who have to witness the Kedushin. Okay? Now, Eidim, and this applies for all the Eidim that we mentioned before. We didn't get into this, but now we'll mention, you know, there's going to be Eidim for the Tanaim, there's going to be Eidim for the Ksuba that we mentioned already, there's going to be Eidei Kedushin, and there's going to be Eidei Yichud. But, you know, we'll discuss that afterwards. And they all have to be people who are Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. They have to be completely observant Jews, both in the realms of Ben Adam Lamakom and in the realms of Ben Adam L'Chavero. It can't be someone who is a Ganef or a Gazma, even if he otherwise keeps Shabbos and Kashrus.
How do you know?
Everyone has a cheskes kashrus,
right?
So if we know that he's a god or a gazlan, then we don't take him for an aid. If we don't know, he's otherwise a Torah observant Jew, so we have a right to assume that he's kashal edus. So we try to get someone who we feel is an honorable person from what we know. You know, don't know for sure. Can't know everything. You know, but we have a reason to assume, and we make sure that these people are not relatives. Also, they cannot be relatives. The Eidim cannot be relatives to each other, and they can't be relatives to the chassan or the kala or their families. And Karov is possible Eidus. Now, there's a whole discussion in the Gemara Sanhedrin, you know, how far does it go? But basically, our minhag is that we don't allow krovim. You know, even far krovim, we, you know, there are limits to, you know, technically how far, you know, is it. But if you know the person somehow related, then you don't use them as a name, give them another key. Okay, so now the ceremony begins. Yeah. So there are two cups of wine under the chuppah, and the Masada Kedushin takes
one of the cups, and he makes the bracha Baruch Pri HaGafen, and then he makes the Birkas Erusin. Bracha Asher Kishon, Mitzosov, Tivano, Al Arayos, Pasolano, Saruso, Svitolano, Sansuchlano, Akaisha, Mitzol, Lechum of the Kiddush. So he makes those two brachas, the Baruch Pri HaGafen and the Birkas Erusin. Now, the Birkas Erusin, some say, is like a Birkas HaMitzvah, like the Rambam says, on doing the Kiddushin. Okay? That's why the Rambam's opinion is that we do it before the giving of the ring. We give the Birkas Erusin. Okay, so then, after the two brachas are recited, so then, both the Chassan and Kala drink from the wine. They drink a little bit from the wine. Okay? Now the way sometimes it's done is we try to involve the two sets of parents. So, because there's going to be drinking now and there's going to be another drinking later. So, we want to get everyone involved. This is not a halacha. You know, the halacha of who has to give them the wine. But some have the minhag that, you know, the father of the chassan will give him the wine now, and the mother of the kala, and then later the mother of the chassan and the father, you know, they'll switch. So each way, each parent is, so the first cup, then maybe, you know, the father of the chassan can give him, and the mother of the kala can give her, and then later on in the ceremony we'll get to the mother of the Chassan will give him, the father of the Kala will give her, etc. But that's just, to include everybody. But both the Chassan and the Kala drink from that first course. Now, the question is, what about the Masada Kedushin? Should he also drink? Because he's the one who made the Baruch Pri HaGafen. You see, really, this is a strange practice. I mean, you put on tefillin this morning, right? So who made the bracha? You made the bracha. You didn't get someone to make the bracha for you. But here, this is the mitzvah of a chassan, so why is the Masada Kedushin making the bracha for him? Because the chassan should make the bracha on his own Kedushin. Right? So, but the minhag is, not every chassan knows how to make a bracha, so therefore the minhag became that, when you don't embarrass anybody, the minhag became that the Masada Kedushin will always make the bracha. In certain circles, I was once Masada Kedushin, and the chassan told me, he was a Taimani, and he said that I guess his family minhag is that the chassan himself makes the brachas. So I made an announcement. I didn't want everyone to think that, you know, we're doing something strange. So before the, you know, when the brachas were about to be recited, I was Messiah Kedushin, so I had people expecting I would make the brachas. So I made an announcement that the chassan is going to make the brachas based on his minhag. But usually that's not the minhag. The minhag, as most Jewish people have the minhag that the Masada Kedushin makes the brachas. So he makes those two brachas.
He doesn't have to drink from it?
Oh, so that's the question. Should he have to drink? So Meikar Hadin, we assume that he doesn't have to drink, because since this Baruch Pri HaGafen is a chiyuv to make, so it's like, No. Normally, when I make a bracha, I can't just make a bracha and you drink. I can't just make a bracha on the water, saying I want to drink a cup of water. So I'll make the bracha and you drink. That's ridiculous. But we have a klal by Birkas HaMitzvah. I can make the bracha and fill it and you put on the tefillin, even though I'm not putting on the tefillin. Because that's in the Yatzah Motzi, since it's a Birkas HaMitzvah, and there's a concept of Kol Yisrael Areim Zalzeh, so it's my responsibility to see that you do the mitzvah, so I can make the bracha on your behalf, but not by Birkas HaNedin. But this Birkas HaNedin is an obligatory birkas hanedah, right? Because you have to make it. So then maybe it's sort of like a birkas hamitzvah. So therefore, when it's a birkas hamitzvah, like by kiddush, I can make kiddush for you, even though I'm not drinking from the wine. Okay? Because that's not a regular bar prayer gofen. It's an obligatory. It's not just when I get in the middle of the week, I want to drink some wine and make a bar prayer gofen. I can't make the bracha for you. I have to, if I'm, right? But if, when the bar prayer gofen is obligatory, so then you can. But ever some, so here, since there's a, the minhag is to make the birkas erusin on wine, so therefore, even though the Masada Kedushin is not drinking the wine, he could make the bracha on behalf of the. However, there's a minhag where Chaim Brisker had a cobra where when he was Masada Kedushin, he would drink the wine as well. Not to rely, because it's not like a chapter like that, it's not like the bracha on the erusin. Is not the Berker Goffin on Erison is not necessarily the same level obligation it is on the other brothers, as we'll see. So it's not a total obligation to have no wine. So therefore, some are not clear that it's not considered like a Berker Mitzvah. So some have the sort of kind of minute was that he'd shake the wine, the cup, and then that he would lick his fingers. And therefore, he would taste the wine as well. So some Masada Kedushin have this minute to shake the wine and then to lick their thumb, lick their fingers, whatever. I'm not into that. I'm not into shaking the wine. You shake the wine, you should have to wipe it. The minute at weddings is to have white wine under the chuppah. Because you don't want to ruin the cow's dress. If it spills a little, the white wine won't stain, but the red wine will. I recently was at a wedding where the Chassan's family, they didn't know this minig, so they brought their own wine they brought red wine. They never heard of such a thing. So luckily the caterer had other wine, and we used the white wine. So some have that minhag to that the Masada Kedushin also drinks, but it's not necessary. And if you ever become Masada Kedushin, so I don't recommend it. It's a much smoother way without doing that. Okay, so then the Chas and the Kala both drink. Okay, now. So you have the chasen kala both drink. So now we're ready to do the giving of the ring, which is the actual, kiddushin itself. So we take some misadri kiddushin do all this that I'm telling you about, looking over the ring and everything before. I like to do everything as it's happening. Okay, even though it's a little bit of a hefsek, because really now you made the bracha, you shouldn't talk, you should right away do the ring part without any talking. But there's a halacha that if you're talking about the inyan, you're not talking about something extraneous, then it's not a hefsek. And even though the Ramos says l'chatchila, you shouldn't be mafsek at all, even for things that are, but still, I feel that it's more important than to do everything as it's happening. So at this point, what we do is we ask to see the ring. Usually someone's holding on the ring. Either the chassid has it in his pocket, or the brother, or somebody has the ring. Now this ring, we show the Eidim, under the chuppah. Some have the minhag that first the chassan says the Eid that these are my Eidim. This one and this one to the exclusion of everything else. I'm not into that. You don't have to say to the exclusion. Just either he can mirach the Eidim, say, you know, Rabbi Goldstein and Rabbi Goldberg are my two Adim. Okay, and then he takes out the ring and he shows the Adim the ring. And they look at the ring and they see that it's a Shana Pruta.
Sure, presumably it is. And then the Messiah condition asks the cousin, is this your ring? You bought it with your own money. Hopefully he already told of the chassid before, that this is just how the Adim should realize. Now, the thing is that when you, the ring that you give under the chuppah is a plain ring without a stone. You don't give stones under the chuppah. When you get an engagement ring, that ring has a stone. That ring costs a lot of money. The one under the chuppah doesn't cost nearly the amount of money as the engagement ring, which costs, whatever, a nice amount. The ring that you're giving under the chuppah is, it costs, but it doesn't cost thousands of dollars. You know, it can cost $60 or something like that. But the engagement ring can cost $1,000. You understand the level of. Now that engagement ring he gave her either at the engagement, or sometime. Usually the people give a bracelet at the engagement, and afterwards they give her the ring. Sometimes she likes to pick it out herself. So, and then usually the ring that you give her under the chuppah, they try to do that it should match. Obviously the engagement ring has a stone. This ring, it doesn't have a stone. The reason why we all want to have a stone is because a stone, you don't know exactly. A stone could be worth thousands or it could be a fake. So she could be thinking that she's getting a ring that's a thousand and it's really only. The margin of error in the stone is great. If you have a regular ring, you know how much is it worth. You know what I mean? It's not going to be worth so much. So therefore, we're afraid it's sort of like she's doing the Kedusha and the toss if you use a stone, because she might be maybe she's accepting the marriage only because she's getting a stone that's worth whatever, and she's really not. So therefore the vinegar is that we just have a plain band, plain ring without a stone on it. And that's the vinegar. Of course this is all taken care of beforehand. So the rabbi calls over the Adim, they take out the ring, he calls over the Adim, and he says, is it Shana Pruta? The Adim look, say that's Shana Pruta. He bought it with the chassid in front of the Adim, he bought it with your money. And he says, yes. Okay, so now we're ready to do the Maisa Kiddushin. So the way the Maisa Kiddushin is done is that there are two parts to the Maisa Kiddushin. There's the Amira and the Nesina. The Amira is the verbal declaration and the Nesina. So the proper way to do it is that the Amira is done first. What the Amira is, Hare at Mekudeshes Li B'taba Zo Kedas Moshe B'Yisrael. So the Chassid says, the Chassid has his ring in his hand. He's speaking to his Kala, and he's saying, and the Adim are hearing this, and he says, Hare at, he's not giving it yet. He says the whole statement, Hare at Mekudesh Asli B'taba Azo, Kedas Moshe B'Yisrael. And after the whole statement is finished, then he takes the ring and he puts it on her right index finger. The right index finger. The minigas, some say the minigas is the right finger, the second finger. That's because in the pasuk Torah Hashem Tamim and Bichivas Nafesh, the Shem Hashem is the second. Eidus Hashem, Ne'amar, Pugudei Hashem. In that capital film, the Shem Hashem is always the second. But he gives it to her in front of there, and the Adim are watching the giving of the ring. So they heard the statement. And then they watch the giving of the ring, and after the ring
is given, the Sarah Kedushin says the Kedeshes, and then from that point is when she's officially married. Meaning, she's an Eishes Ish now. And if God forbid, they would need to break up, it's from that point on that a get would be required. If God forbid, the marriage doesn't work out. Okay, so that's the kiddushin. Okay. So from this point on, that's the first part of the ceremony. That's the eris, or kiddushin. Yeah. Now the second part of the marriage is called the nesu'in. Now, it used to be Bizman Chazal, there was a year between the two of them. Whereas a person would give the ring in front of Eden to his wife, and then they wouldn't have the Nisuan, the Nisuan is the chuppah, and living together for a year later, because for financial reasons, he would have to, they would get finances to get ready to marry, and it would take a year for him to do this. Today, we do everything under the chuppah at once. We do the erusin and the nesu'in all under the chuppah. So what is the nesu'in? So now by the nesu'in, we're going to make another bar priyagaf by the nesu'in. But we just made one by the erusin. So it looks a little strange. So what we do now is we want to make a pause. We want to make a pause between the erusin and the nesu'in. So the minhag became to read the ksuba. To read the ksuba out loud between the eris and the suin. This way it breaks it up. It breaks up the eris from the suin, and therefore when we make two berakhah guffins, it doesn't look awkward that we're making two it's like having a cup of wine, make a berakhah guffin, then 2 seconds later make another berakhah guffin. It looks strange. But this way it breaks it up. So, Rav Shachter pointed out that the idea is that since it's two separate mitzvahs, so really by right, even if you didn't make a break, it would be okay. Just like by the Dal Kosos, we make, the minute of the Ashkenazim, we make four brachas, four brachas, often for the Seder night, even though there's not such a big hefsek between the, but since it's four separate mitzvahs, so to speak, so each mitzvah gets its own. So the Eirusin and the Suin are considered like different mitzvahs, so therefore they get their own bracha. But it looks strange to what? To have two brothers one after the other, so we want to break up the time. So we do things now to cause pause in the ceremony, so which became part of the ceremony. And that is, so the main thing we do is we have the ksuba read. Now, in America, that's considered like a big kibbutz. Even though, you know, they say in Europe that was like the Shabbos would do it, that was considered like a very menial thing. But, you know, America, you know, the person who says the most, that's considered, that's why like the verse is getting maftir, because Chazal was like a, it was like a very low-level kibbutz, because everyone else was reading from the Chumash, and you read the Navi. Today, we're getting Maftir, that's been said at all. Maftir, ooh, that's big stuff, because you read a whole, you say a lot. So same thing by the Ksuba. The Ksuba is really, technically, halachically, not such a big kibbutz, but it became, in America, it became like if you have somebody, the person who's signed Kedushin, that's considered a very big kibbutz. The 8-day Kedushin that you pick, that's considered very big kibbutz. And the reading of the ksuba is also considered very big kibbutz, even though halachically it's just to make a pause. So the person reads the ksuba. He reads the whole ksuba. And then he gives the ksuba to the chassan. And then the chassan hands the ksuba to the kala. Some have a minhag that it should be handed to the kala in front of those same eidim kedushin. And some say there's no such requirement to have eidim, so see the giving over of the ksuba. In other words, some say once the Edom heard the Harayat and saw the giving of the ring, then they could go back in the seats. And some Rabbanim are Makmin that they should be around to see the Mesiras HaKesubah, when the Chassan gives the Ksubah to his to his wife. And then the Kala then he has to give the Ksubah to her mother, somebody has to take the Achrayis that after the Chuppah that the Ksubah should be what? Should be put with the belongings. It shouldn't get lost. You shouldn't take that for granted, because you should have, at your own wedding, you should have somebody, maybe a friend of yours, who is going to take it from the mother and going to take the tanoim. Because if you don't have someone in charge, these things that can be left on the table, then there's people cleaning up. They don't know, and they'll just, you know. So it's very important that there be somebody in charge who's going to take the ksuba after the chuppah and put it in the room where all the belongings go. Okay? So, one second. And another thing that's done in this parkarim to also to break things up is that if you want a speech under the chuppah, which also is brought down and comes from the church as well, this idea of speaking under the chuppah, but some have this minute. So this is the time to do it. Between the two parts of the ceremony, where we're putting the ksubah, so then we put the speech as well. So this way, we break up the erusin from the ksubah. Okay, you ready?
Earlier mentioned that it used to be the erusin, and then like, there used to be a long time in between erusin and the ksubah.
Okay, yes.
So the chassan used to give the kala the ring at the erusin.
Yeah.
So they would be married for that year.
Right.
But they wouldn't be living together.
They wouldn't be living together. Mm-hmm. Right.
And luckily they're married.
And luckily they're married. So this girl now can't live, obviously can't be with any other man, but can't be with her husband either.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think she can be.
No, they have to do the suin. The suin is a separate action. We'll see what it is. So now, after the suin is read and we wasted it all the time, now we're ready to do the nisuin. So what is the nisuin? So the Ramah says that Nisun is the fact that they're standing under the canopy. That itself is the Nisun. So the canopy represents like his domain, and she came into his domain. So that's the Nisun. So that's considered the second step to the marriage. You see, then they didn't have a chuppah at the time of the giving of the ring. The giving of the ring was a separate thing, and the nisuin was a separate thing. Now that's one opinion. Some say that the canopy doesn't mean anything, and it's only the yichud later is the nisuin. And some say, no, that's not the yichud later, it's when they go home together after the wedding, and they're together, that's when the nisuin is. So that's sort of different opinions when the nisuin is. But the suin is the, you know, is the second step of the marriage, so to speak. Like the Gemara says, one of the differences is God forbid she dies, and if she only inherits him, he doesn't inherit her. He only inherits his wife if she was not only Erisin, but she was the suin wife. So that's the second level of bringing, like Rav Shaka said, the Erisin is Eishes Yish Shaloba Beis Habaal. And as soon as the Rav Shaka said, is that she's the base of her. Now she's in his domain. But with giving her the ring, so to speak, he acquires her. She's also to the rest of the world. And then the second step of the suin is when he brings her into his domain. And that's either the canopy, or it's the yichud room, or it's the, you know, being together after the wedding.
In terms of like, let's say Yibum also, it's not until after Nisuin.
Okay, so that's in the Suin. Okay. So now in the Suin, we make seven brachas. The first seven brachas, that was besides the two brachas we made before, there's a minute to, I mean, the halacha that we make, you know, the halacha, that we say seven brachas. These are called the Brichas Nesuim. Okay? Now, so technically, this is an opportunity to give seven kibbutim out. And that's what people do today. They call up seven different people. And each one says, another of the brachas. In the old days, they didn't do this. This is like 100 years ago, no one did that. The rabbi who was Masada Kedushin, he just said all the seven brachas. Now, this is a more modern thing. It probably is modern, probably around 30 years, I don't know, by now. This minig to give, some have the minig that the first two you give to one person. Because we don't have the Berker Goffin, there's a question whether it's a Berker Sanhedrin, a Berker Mitzvah, so you put it together with another Bracha. So some have the minig not to split the first two. I'm of the opinion that it's better to split, this way you can give Mechabit another person. The Chumra not. Someone just recently told me a story. They were the announcer at their relative's thing, and they had all the different rabbanim that they could call up, seven different rabbanim. And then the Masada Kedushin was considered a big gadol, and he insisted that they shouldn't split. So under the chuppah, he had to make the decision who we were moving, because they had seven people lined up and seven brachas. And now there's a big rav paskin that we can't split the first two. So it means that that whoever's getting the first has to get the first two. So now this 25-year-old had to decide which of the Rosh Hashivas or whatever is going to be left out. So he was telling me it wasn't such a pleasant thing. So now we call up either six or seven people, and they each get a bracha. The last bracha is considered the most, the biggest kibbutz. So if you want someone special, and you want to give them a high-level kibbutz, so the last is considered the highest-level kibbutz. So the ksuba is considered a high-level. Obviously, the Masada Kedushin and the Eidi Kedushin is a high-level kibbutz. And the reading of the ksuba in America is considered a high-level kibbutz. And the last bracha. Well, of course, all the brachas are a nice kibbutz, but if you're the highest level, if you want a person you want to mechabit the most, you give him the last bracha. Bracha chrisa. Okay. And then, okay. So then in some circles, more the OU circles, they sing Imeshkachech. And they have the different opinions. You put ashes on the chassan's forehead. But on the Masada Kedushin, they usually do it at that point when they sing Imeshkachech. Put ashes, let's say, from a churban on his forehead. And then you have he breaks the cup. Some might. What?
Where did that cup come from?
It's a Zechel Lechurban thing. I would have to check where the original place. I'm not telling you a minute that only three people do.
Well, when you say minig makul b'chol means that people don't question it, but it's not done by everybody.
Okay, maybe it's not done by everybody, but if you've gone, I don't know how many weddings you've gone to, but if you've gone to a lot of weddings, some do it before the chuppah, different opinions when you do it, but then you have the...
is it an all issue of like chuppah sakum, that Christians will do it at some point in the year? Like Ash Wednesday or something, it's like kind of a Christian custom.
A lot of things about the wedding are... I never heard people say that this was chukasakum. A lot of things people do at weddings, is considered chukas, it's questionable out of chukasakum. But okay, so then the chassan breaks the cup. Some do it during the meshkachech, but they don't want people to say mazel tov when they break the cup, the glass.
and some do it after him, Eshkachech, and then after that, everyone's saying Mazel Tov, hugging, kissing, and then the Chasen and Kala go to the Yichidu. There's different menhagim whether the Chasen Kala can hold hands coming out of the Yichid room. In Hasidic circles, that's the norm, that the Chasen holds the Kala's hand coming out of the Chuppah, going down the aisle. In some other circles, not. So I usually tell the Chasen that if the Masada Kedushin doesn't care one way or the other, you should ask your Kala. Some Kala's dafka want it, and you know, the hand be held, and some dafka don't want it. So if she wants it, then you should do it. And then you go to the yichud room, and you get two eidim to check that there's no one in the yichud room and to watch the chas and the kala go in. And they stay in there for around, and the two eidim stand outside the room. They're also, you know, not relatives to each other, the chas and the kala. And they stay in different opinions around 10 minutes, and then they knock, and then they leave. And
they eat.
Yeah, no. Chas and Kala eat inside the room. I'm talking about the Eidim. The Eidim are outside. They're waiting outside to guard the door for 10 minutes, and no one should come in. And the Chas and Kala, you know, they break their fast. In the Yichid room, I mean, there became a minhag for the past 10 years that he gives her a gift in the Yichid, but this is, you know, not a halachic thing. It's more probably the jewelers made this minhag. okay, and that's and then there's the rest of the wedding, and then they go after the wedding. They go together. Many people go to hotels these days, and that's the basic wedding ceremony. And okay, so I thought this is a, you know, this is something that Bez Hashem, if it'll be nogeh to use, you know, hopefully very soon, or I'm sure a lot of your friends, you know, going to weddings is something that, so you should at least have a halacha context of everything that's going on at a wedding. Okay.